Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5, verse 33. Matthew 5, I'm going to read verses 33 through 37. 5:33 through 37. Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, "You shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord."
But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil. This is the reading of God's holy word. Well, I already know that we are going to get wet. So hold on a second. You see it. If you come to the back at the end of the service, usually, and I don't have my coat off, I have it off, and you can see the wet. So let's go ahead and take care of that right now. You know, we look at these verses that I've just read, and we compare them to what we've been studying on the sixth and the seventh commandment. You look at what Jesus has just said and his teaching on murder. We've been looking at murder. We've been looking at adultery. We've been looking at the institution of marriage, and these words on truth and honesty, they don't seem to compare. I mean, don't we have other more important issues to talk about than speech or honesty or truthfulness? And one reason I think we find for looking at this more seriously than sometimes we might think is in Matthew chapter 12, verse 36, Jesus says this, "But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment." So you see, Jesus, he's not just concerned about adultery and adultery in our hearts, lusting. He's not just concerned about murder, physical murder, and sinful anger in our hearts, and the institution of marriage and staying married instead of getting a divorce. He's very concerned with every word that proceeds out of our mouths. In fact, if we understood this one statement, just 12:36, Matthew 12:36, we understood that every word is going to be judged, then we would reflect and we would say, that means that I'm in the very presence of God right now as I speak. Every word, every thought that's in my brain is being evaluated by a God who is present in all places at all times. And this God knows everything. We call that His omniscience. And this, if we just thought about that, and we stopped the sermon right now, and we went away, and we thought, God is watching every thought, sees everything, knows every word that's about to roll off my tongue, it would change the way we behave, wouldn't it? And we could stop right there. It would change the way we behave. So God, Jesus is telling us that God and He Himself are very concerned about honesty in our speech. And in Matthew 5:33-37, Jesus is going to expose the Pharisees' distortion or perversion of honesty that they have. They have a version of honesty that Jesus is going to expose. It's very interesting, their version of honesty. And He's going to expose it, and then He's going to give us His positive teaching. And so I want to give you the sermon this morning on honesty under three heads: honesty and the Mosaic legislation, honesty and the Pharisaic distortion, and honesty and Jesus' interpretation. So we're going to look first at honesty and the Mosaic legislation. Look at verse 33. "Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, 'You shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord.'" Now, at first glance, that's not a direct quotation from the Old Testament, but it's not really an inaccurate understanding of what's of some truth that's being taught in the Old Testament. Jesus is drawing this from what was said by the ancients and what's being taught by the scribes and the Pharisees. But this is the fourth time you've heard the antithesis. And when I say that, that sounds really big for a second, but think about it like this. You have heard that the ancients were told, but I say to you. Four times we've heard that, and this is the fourth time, and you ought to go, you know, Jesus is about to expose something that's kind of messed up. Jesus is about to show us that the Pharisees have emphasized something and made something more important than it should be and taken the emphasis off of something else where it should be. So Jesus is about to expose this distortion. But before he does that, we first want to look at what Moses does say. And let me just give you four passages of Scripture. I want to read these to you just for you to listen to what the Old Testament says, what Moses wrote. And if in Exodus chapter 20, verse 7, this is the third commandment. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. That's the first thing. We do not take the Lord's name in vain. How do we use the Lord's name? We have to use it carefully. Moses also says in Leviticus 19:12, you shall not swear falsely by my name so as to profane the name of your God, I am the Lord. In Numbers chapter 30, verse 2, if a man makes a vow to the Lord, or if a man takes an oath to bind himself with a binding obligation, that man shall not violate his word. You hearing that? If you make an oath, you need to keep that oath. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Well, to finish this up in Deuteronomy 23, I'm going to give you verse 21 and 23. Listen to these words. When you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay to pay it. Did you say you were going to do something? Don't delay to pay it. For it would be a sin in you to do that. And the Lord your God will surely require it of you. Verse 23, you shall be careful to perform what goes out of your lips, just as you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised. So these verses are representative, and I could give you a whole lot more, but these verses are representative of where Jesus gets this statement, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. Just reading them, are those hard to understand? Those verses are not hard to understand. They prohibit the making of a vow and breaking it. They encourage, positively speaking, honesty. They encourage vow keeping. They encourage truth telling. Why does God give these people in the Old Testament and these verses for us today? Why does He give those verses to them and to us? Well, there's a reason. And the reason is this: we are so prone to deceit. We are prone to deception. We are prone to lying. And so He gives us these laws, if you will, to harness or to bridle or to restrain our propensity to be dishonest. Oaths and vows are given to make the truth more secure. Oaths and vows are given to give us confidence and assurance that what we say we will do. We will say it and we will do it. Vows are given, you see. And if we think about it, just think about it one more time. I want to lay it in front of you again. If you just think about it, God, you're in the presence of God when you speak. You're in the presence of God when you meditate, when you think. And it would change the way we behave. Vows are made to speak of God being called to witness what we do and what we say. And it points out that we are to make these sorts of statements. We make vows and we take oaths only on solemn occasions, where there's matters of great weight and importance. So, for instance, we might take a vow of allegiance to our country. We take vows when we get married. We take vows when we join the church. We take vows when a man becomes an officer of the church. We take vows, and these things don't make our words, the words that are not more important, but it places a special emphasis on the words that are being said. In front of people, we're saying in front of God and other people, this is what we are going to do. I was telling some of the guys the other day that, if I said to you tonight at the end of the service, if I said, I'll pick you up tomorrow to take you fishing at 7 o'clock, I don't think I need to make a vow for that. My word will speak for itself, right? But those words should be just as powerful and understood as if I was saying it in front of everybody when I get married to my wife. But that's a ceremony. That's a special time where special emphasis is placed on the words we say in front of God and these witnesses. So we see that this is the Mosaic legislation. Well, second, let's look at the honesty and the Pharisaic distortion. Now, it's very interesting as we think about the scribes and the Pharisees, they always do something. They always take the law of God and they reduce it, math people, they reduce it to the lowest common denominator. In what they do, like for instance in the Sixth Commandment, we've talked about this, thou shalt not commit murder. And they taught that if you do not commit the physical act of murder, if I do not, listen to me, do that, I'm good. Hey, look, if I got sinful anger, forget that. I haven't done that. That's narrowly defining the Sixth Commandment. And we said the same thing when it comes to the Seventh Commandment. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Hey, listen, as long as I haven't committed the physical act of murder, adultery. Hey, listen, look, if I've got lust in my heart, you can forget about that. Because you see, I don't do this, you see. I haven't done that. And this is what we do. These men do this. They reduce everything down to something outward, something that they can see, so that makes them feel good. And they forget about the thoughts and the intents of their own hearts. And the same thing is true of us. This is not just about the scribes and the Pharisees. This is the nature of our own hearts. We isolate a thing, or we isolate some things, and we say, I haven't done that. You know, I was in the store yesterday. I was in Kohl's yesterday, and you know what I was hearing them do I was stunned. I was sitting there. I was looking for that chair that men sit in. You know, they don't have those chairs around as much when I was a little kid, and I couldn't find one of those chairs. So I found myself sitting almost on the floor, and I'm listening to them, and they were virtue signaling that, hey, you know what we are all about? We're all about the environment. This is who we are. And they're telling us this is what we do. We do that. You see? Well, they don't tell you about loving God. They tell you, we do this. You see? It's so narrow. We define holiness. It'd be like a long time ago, some of you guys remember. We define holiness as I don't go to the cinema. I'm not worldly. I don't go to the cinema. Oh, I'm not worldly. I don't play cards. I'm not worldly. I don't drink, and I don't smoke, and I don't go with the girls who do drink and smoke. You know, we've heard all that, right? I don't do that. This is a narrow definition of holiness or godliness. And so when it comes to oath making and honesty, the scribes and the Pharisees, they found a narrow way to define honesty so that they could keep the letter and disobey the spirit. Now let me see. I want to make sure we get this. So I dreamed up an illustration. Many of you have a coffee table in your house, and you have it's very nice. And my mom, she has a really nice coffee table, but she doesn't have coffee on it. But some of us have coffee things on it, like coffee cups and coffee saucers and sugar cubes and all the little accoutrements that go with all of this. So it's all there in front of us, and little Jimmy comes into the house, and you look at little Jimmy, and you say, "Now, little Jimmy, I don't want you." We could say little Johnny, right? Little Jimmy, I don't want you to touch anything on the coffee table. You got it? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Mama. Oh, yeah, Mama, I got it. And so Mama walks out, and she's going and tending to her business. And she walks back in, and little Jimmy's over there. And what's he doing? He's got a 12-inch ruler, and he's touching the coffee cups. And he's moving the sugars back and forth. And he's messing with the little things that got the little milk or creamer in there. I don't know what you call those things. But all of it's back there. And he's there doing it like this. And unless God is working grace in his heart, listen to me now. Unless God is graciously working in his heart, she says, "Son, I told you not to touch it." Unless God's working in his heart, he's going to say what? "I'm not touching it. The stick's touching it. I'm not touching it. I'm not doing that." You see? See how he did it? This is what we do. "I'm not doing that. I'm not touching it." You know he is. He's figured a way out. He thinks he's got it down. That's exactly what these scribes and Pharisees did. They defined false vows to be so narrow that if you only had to be honest when you used God's name. You hear me? They shifted it. It says here, you shall not make false vows, but you shall fulfill all your vows to the Lord. Well, if you don't use the Lord's name when you make the vow, you don't have to be as careful about what you said. And that's what they were saying. If I swear to God, I have to be very careful and very conscientious because I don't want to commit perjury. No one, that's the sin I don't want to commit. Don't want to commit perjury. But if I say anything and leave God's name out, if I say, if I swear by heaven, or if I swear by the earth, or if I swear by Jerusalem, or if I swear by the hair on my head, I don't have to be so careful about that. And so what this did is it resulted in what we would call a multiplicity of oaths. A whole theology of oaths. I swear by heaven. I swear by the earth that I will be in church on Sunday morning. I swear or vow by the earth that, you know what, I will have and hold you till death do us part. I swear by Jerusalem that I have not cheated on my test, and I swear by my head that all that stuff on that English paper that I turned in, it's not plagiarized, it's my own thought and my own work. But you see, I haven't called God to be my witness as I've made those vows, and so I might just be just a little bit deceptive. I'm totally free and clear on this. I can be deceptive because I'm not committing perjury. This sounds absolutely silly, doesn't it? But this is what they did. It promoted dishonesty. It promoted deceit and lying, even justification of their lying. Well, then let's look at Jesus' interpretation, honesty in Jesus' interpretation. Notice what it says in verse 34, but I say to you, make no oath at all. The first thing that comes to mind is this. You got to ask this question. Everybody asks this question. Does that mean I'm never to take an oath? Does that mean that I can't go and sit in a court and sit in the witness stand and put my hand on the Bible and say, I swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me, God being my witness. Am I never to do that? And in the days of the Reformation, and even in our day, there are many people who say, well, Jesus has said, make no oath at all, and therefore I will not make one oath ever. Okay? Now, I can appreciate anybody who wants to not to compromise, and we all would like to see people who do not want to compromise, but we have to look at what Jesus has said, make no oath at all, and we have to look at it in light of the entire Bible. In fact, we have to look at it in light of Jesus' own life, you see. Because what we're going to see is Jesus makes oaths. So we can't mean that we can't ever make an oath, but let me just tell you some of the information. If Jesus is telling us never to make an oath, then Jesus is at odds with Moses, what we just saw, that Mosaic legislation. And as we've studied every one of these commandments coming up to this point, Jesus has always agreed with Moses. Jesus has always agreed with the Old Testament. So he can't mean that we can never make an oath. Another thing that's very interesting is that in the Old Testament, not only does Moses teach us and preach to us about the importance of oaths, but we find Old Testament saints making oaths in the Bible. Do you remember that Abraham swore, he made Eliezer his servant swear, you go to the land of Mesopotamia where I'm from, and you find a wife for my son Isaac, and that is the only place you are to find a wife for him. You swear to it that you will only bring a woman from there. We find other men. Jacob made Joseph swear, and Jonathan, we made David swear. God himself even swears. In Genesis chapter 9, after the flood, God tells Noah that he will never flood the earth again, ever. And you can see the rainbow. That's the guarantee. There's the covenant right there. God made oaths. God made an oath to send a redeemer named Jesus Christ, and God made an oath to raise that redeemer from the dead. God swears oaths, and when God swears out oaths, he doesn't do it to make his word more sure. He doesn't do it to make his word more reliable. His words are always reliable. Why does he do it? Well, he does it to emphasize something special and something very important. Look at these promises and remember them. You hear me? Listen to this. And Jesus does exactly the same thing. As we go through this whole text in Matthew chapter 5. But I say to you, that's an oath. Truly I say to you, that's another one. Truly, truly I say to you. Look, what is he saying? He's saying, not my words aren't worthy to be heard. He's saying, listen to what I'm telling you. This is of vital importance. I'm telling you the truth. And Jesus in Matthew chapter 26, 63 through 64, he's standing in front of the great high priest. And the high priest says these words. He says, I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus doesn't sit there and go, I can't make an oath. You know what he says? You have said it yourself. It is so. Jesus takes oaths. And finally, Paul and many of the other apostles, you'll find them making oaths about what they are saying. And so our conclusion this morning about this is that it's not inappropriate for us to make oaths. Our words should always be our bond. But at the same time, there are times when we place special emphasis on special things like weddings and officers who come before the church. These things are reserved for times of solemn weight and importance. Well, then what is Jesus teaching? Make no oath at all. Well, what he's doing is he's condemning flippant oaths. He's condemning all this multiplicity of oaths that these men have come up with that are silly. He's saying eliminate dishonesty. He's condemning these men for saying, I don't have to be honest if I say heaven. I don't have to be honest if I say by the earth. I don't have to be honest if I say by the gold in the temple. I don't have to be honest if I say by the hairs on my head. I only have to be honest when I call God's name as my witness. And Jesus is saying, and I like what one commentator said, that's ridiculous. Right? This is ridiculous. He goes on to say, look, listen, what is heaven but the very throne of God? What is the earth but the very footstool of God's feet? You say, what is Jerusalem but the very city of the great king? And what are the hairs of your head? Only God can turn one hair white or black. Everything we swear is in front of God's eyes. Everything that we swear, we stand in front of God's presence. He made it all. So what is he saying? He condemns dishonesty, and he lays out a principle for us in verse 37 of honesty. Look at what it says. But let your statement be, and this is so simple, isn't it? Yes, yes, or no, no. And then he says this, anything beyond these is of evil. So if you're going to affirm something, what do you need to say? Yes. And if somebody says to you, hey, would you give me a little bit more assurance? You know what he says to say? Yes, yes. That's all you need to do. And if you need to deny something and you need to say that's not so, you need to say no. And if they need a little bit more assurance that your word no means no, then what are you supposed to say? No, no. You see, every word that we say, if we go to a court of law, and I'm getting good at learning all this stuff. We watch these shows and everybody's on, always in a court and always putting, well, I don't know what they put their hands on now, but they used to put their hand on the Bible all the time. And they swear that they're going to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. And, the thing of it is that every time I speak, whether it's about going fishing in the morning at 7 o'clock or if I'm in a court of law, every one of my words ought to be yes, yes, and no, no. There'll be no difference. There'll be no difference. All my words, all your words ought to be truthful and honest and dependable. And how vital is this truth for us? We live in a world of what? Man, we live in a world of lies. Amazing. We live in a world of dishonesty. We live in a world where people are advertising things to us. I mean, I get to the point where they tell me the car's supposed to be so efficient, I'm waiting on the car to fill itself up with a gas pump that comes out of the sky. I mean, how efficient can it be? We're being told all sorts of things. Always propaganda, always untruth. Narratives that drive certain things. There's a group of people out there who believe in 10 years, 12 years, the earth is going to go to pieces. It's a narrative that they bought into it, and you will only hear them talk about that, and it's not based on any real truth, but it's their narrative. And we have a narrative out there that, we talk about women's reproductive health, and so they don't talk about abortion. And this is a lie. This is dishonest. Well, let's get more personal. Parents teach your children dishonesty. Have you ever gone to the buffet line and have you ever seen a parent do this? Hey, look, if you go to get drinks in a buffet, you know how much they cost? They cost like $2.50 or $3 each, and you got five people like in our family, that saves $15 if you don't do that. You can just immediately knock off $15. And so there's people who go and say, well, we want the water instead of the soda. And then they'll get the water, and they'll get the cup, and they got the ice and the water, and they go over when nobody's looking, they pour it out, and they get them a Coke. That's dishonest. That's dishonest. That's simple stuff, isn't it? We had my brother-in-law, I'll never forget, my brother-in-law told me that they had a car seat, and his little boy didn't like to get in the car seat. So he told him, he said, well, son, you don't have to get in the car seat if you don't want to. But if a cop comes around, we're going to say, duck down, copper. Duck down, copper. That's teaching a little boy to be dishonest. Young people, when you go to school and you have to sign, have a paper signed by your parents, and you forge it instead of have your parents sign it, that's dishonest. Telling your parents you're going to go one place when you're planning on going to another place, that's dishonest. These are dishonest things. In the same, our word needs to be true. We need to be honest. What about promising to do something for someone and choosing not to do it because it becomes so inconvenient? That's dishonest. I'm going to take you fishing. Really? I'm going to take you hunting. Really? How long ago did you say that? There's a verse in Psalm 15 that just haunts me every time I make a promise. And it goes like this. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell in your holy hill? And here's the answer. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. Did you get that? He swears to his own hurt and does not change. I made a promise to take my son fishing. I made a promise to take a friend to do something. And it's just kind of inconvenient right now. And so I just kind of walk away and don't remember it. Or I don't do what I say. And I'm dishonest. Now listen, you know what? What I've learned is, and I've got, this is real stuff, isn't it? So I go and I make these promises and I'm just going to make a big one up. Let's just say that you got tickets to the World Series first game. And you promised to take somebody to do something. I think if you go to that person and you say, you know, I got the best tickets in the world for one game of the World Series. Can I do with you what we planned maybe next week or tomorrow? And most of the time people will say, sure, no problem. No problem at all. But there's also times when we make a promise and it doesn't matter how many tickets we got to the World Series. We know we need to go take care of that because it's that important. Some of these things we need to do when we say. We have to weigh that out, don't we? You know, what I found out is the more I operate by Psalm 15 and I'm honest according to Psalm 15 and I let it hurt enough and I say these promises and I let it hurt enough, then I begin to be very careful how many promises I do make so that I make sure I keep all the promises I do make. Think about speaking according to personal preference. Now, this is where we say things that keep us in good with everybody. Now, I'm at church, and I'm a Christian at church, and I want you to be my friend at church, and so I talk to you at church, but if I go to work, what I do at work is I don't act like I'm a Christian at all. Because, see, I want to keep the people at church thinking I'm a Christian. I want to go to work over here and act like I'm not a Christian, and I'm using the truths in order to pursue my own interest. Think about a car salesman. What do? Now, an honest one won't treat you. You could watch that. I can't think of the movie. What's that movie called? Flywheel. Y'all need to watch Flywheel. It's a movie about a car salesman that cheated people. Then he went and got honest. And he sold people on lies. And he said, this car's got this many miles, and this car's this, that, and the other. And then they'd come to find out this car had been in so many wrecks, and it is not a good car. But he used the truths that he made things up in order to make some money. And we got people like Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5. And what do? They go out and they sell a piece of property. And they want everybody to think that they've sold the piece of property and taken all the money for the sale of that property. And they're going to give it to the church just like Barnabas. But they didn't give all the money to the church like Barnabas. They kept back some for themselves. But they wanted everybody to believe that they were like Barnabas and had given it all. And the Apostle Peter says, you've not lied to men, you've lied to who? You've lied to God. They both fell down dead. They fell down dead. You know, folks, listen, let's just talk about being parents for a second. You and I, we decrease the confidence of our kids in our own words. When we say things like, I'm going to get you. If you don't do what I tell you, I'm going to really, really, really get you. And we get louder. I'm talking about myself. I tell you, I told somebody the other day, I said, you know, it's not a great thing to have two floors because we find ourselves kind of yelling at the kids upstairs, you know. I'm going to really come get you if you don't stop doing that. But we cause our kids to lack confidence in our words when we don't go and make certain that they know we mean business when we say yes and we mean business when we say no. And if no means no at 5 minutes later, then at the beginning it means no at 5 minutes later, and it means no 20 days later, unless it's something that needs to change because of their age. What does God require of us? Well, Psalm 51 tells us that God requires truth in our innermost parts, in our innermost being. God desires that we speak truth in love, and He tells us that we're fallen in Adam, we're conceived and born in sin. And out of the abundance of our hearts, because of our fall, what comes out of us is dishonesty and deceit. And the psalmist even says this. Listen, this is God saying this. He says, we go astray from the womb speaking lies. Yeah, you like that? Liar. You're a liar. You like to hear that? Worst of all, God not only requires truth in our innermost parts, and it's not to be found there, but Jesus says anything beyond yes, yes, and no, no is evil. Jesus says it's evil to be dishonest. God says it's evil to be dishonest, and God hates lying. Psalm 5:6 says God hates lying. Psalm 19:5 says a witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will not escape. Revelation 21:8 says that all liars, will burn in the lake of fire. Not just sorcerers, not just murderers, not just immoral persons, not just unbelievers, but all liars. The destiny of all liars is the lake of fire. What do we need? What's the answer to all of this? Well, you and I, we need a God who made a vow to send a Redeemer and kept His vow. You and I, we need a God who kept His vow and said He would send a Redeemer and raise Him from the dead. You and I, we need a Redeemer who came, and it says in John chapter 1 that this Redeemer was full of grace and what? Truth. Honesty. We need a Redeemer who came, and every word that He spoke, He was taught by the Father to speak the what? The truth. He spoke only the truth. You and I, we need a truth teller, and that's Jesus Christ. He said, but I say to you, truly I say to you, truly, truly I say to you. Why? To get your attention that He speaks the truth and nothing but the truth. So help Him, God. That's what we need. We need somebody to tell us the truth. We need somebody to tell us that we've lied, that we're dishonest, that we're calculating. And you know what I want to hear? I want to hear that I'm good. I want to hear that I'm a truth-telling man. I want to hear what I want to hear, and then I stand before God based on my own goodness. But Jesus doesn't do that. He tells us the truth. Because of love, He tells us the truth. And no matter how much we tell ourselves lies, we know the truth. This Redeemer not only tells us that we're liars, but He tells us He's the truth. He says, I am the truth. and I'll always keep my promises. Jesus says, listen, you know, I wasn't afraid to stand in front of the Sanhedrin and say, I am the Christ. I am the Son of God. I am going to be sitting at the right hand of power. But before I get to the right hand of power, I've got to go to the cross. And on the way to the cross, Jesus, that whole monkey jury and court and all the travesty of justice that was going on, it was totally foul. But there was another court going on at that time. And in that court, God was placing on Jesus Christ every dishonesty that we ever had in our bodies and our brains. Jesus, upon Him, God the Father placed all our deceit, all our sin, and all our lying. All of it. So that we might be saved. Jesus is telling us the answer to our dishonesty. Jesus is the answer to our dishonesty. You know what's the difficult part about this? You'd be sitting there right now saying, I hate what I'm hearing. The thing about this is so unnerving is this. The reason that we won't accept it is because of dishonesty. We have to be honest about our dishonesty. Will you be honest about your dishonesty? You and I need a Jesus who's honest, telling the truth all the time, telling us that He can make us a man or a woman who's honest, telling us that He can turn our lives around into truth tellers and truth speakers. We need to be honest about our dishonesty. Will you be honest? Will you look to Jesus Christ? Luke chapter 8 says that the good soil receives God's word, and it's a good heart, and it's an honest heart. God has to change that heart, though. And if you look to Him, He will give you truth in the innermost parts, which is just exactly what He requires. He gives what He requires. Let's pray.